guilt is burning, inside I'm hurting. This ain't a feeling I can keep. So
you're
blame it on
New
the
England
night.
Soccer Weekly on 1510 WUFC. Give the show a call at 617-237-1234. 617-237-1234. And now your host, Tom Quinlan.
Blame it on me. Blame it on the night.
1510 WUFC. Welcome to New England Soccer Weekly. I'm Tom Quinlan. Also, joined as always by Sean Donahue, and this week's special appearance by Kevin Coleman. Chris Landry on the ones and twos producing it live for you, and it is a beautiful Saturday in November here on the coast of Marina Bay. And again, we welcome you to New England Soccer Weekly. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Great, great.
Yeah, good. How are you?
Good. Not too bad. And quickly, right into the Allied Healthcare Insurance Guest Expert Hotline. Right now, joining us on the program, all the way down in from PPL Park down in Philadelphia, winner in last night's Big East semifinal matchup versus Creighton. A lot of great college action going on around the area, and we're going to talk about it today on the show. But we'll start off with Kiesel Broom, the starting goalkeeper for the Providence Friars, who helped get the Friars a 1-0 win and a spot into the Big East finals last night down at PPL Park. Congratulations, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. How's everybody doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, good. You know, just kind of, you know, we're in the recovery process, getting ready for our game tomorrow.
Yep, big game tomorrow. Just take us through last night, though, Kiesel. It was a big, first off, Creighton ended the season with you guys. You didn't end too well against them, and you went into the Big East looking for redemption, Big East playoffs looking for redemption against Creighton, and you were able to get it last night. You faced some early pressure in the early minutes of the game, but you handled yourselves well, and you made a couple of big saves as well. So can you take us through the early goings of the match?
Yeah, and going off what you said, you know, we went to Creighton in the last game of the season, and we had the opportunity to win the league outright, and, you know, we didn't do ourselves justice by, you know, giving up an early goal, and, you know, on the day, you know, we just didn't perform, and it was just their day, and we knew that coming into this game that it's a different atmosphere. You know, they're not at home, they're not at their Morrison Stadium where they have, you know, 3,000, 4,000 fans come out every game, and, you know, we've kind of been here before. We were here last year, and we kind of know how the ropes go, so we know we had that to our advantage, and we had our game plan set almost exactly how it was against the first game, and we were prepared, and, you know, not conceding a goal always helps our attack, and, you know, we can defend as long as we can, but we know that our attack only needs one opportunity, and we can get the win.
You might have ended the season with two losses, but you were a team that throughout the year people were paying attention to nationwide, ranked nationally 12-4-2. You guys ended the year. Can you talk about the special atmosphere that surrounds your locker room this year and with your guys? Because it seems like that from the outside looking in, this was a long time coming for this program, and it really is something special leading into the finals tomorrow night against Xavier.
Well, no, I think this has been like a long time coming, and this has not just come from the team that we have now. This has come from teams that we've had in the past, even before when I was here. And I think that, you know, we have a big senior class that's leaving after this year, and I know a lot of guys, a lot of the younger guys want to do the best they can for the senior class. And, you know, this is only part of our kind of our seasonal goal to get back to PPL Park and get back to the final and try to make the season special.
Quick turnaround, obviously, between, you know, the big semifinal win and the final against Xavier, another great team ranked 11th right now. How do you manage to recover just with one day off? And is that a difficult thing to do, having two such big games so close together?
Yeah, it's tough, just physically and mentally. You know, physically, you have to take care of our body, you know, ice baths after the game. It also has to come down to nutrition as well, eating the right thing that our body can, you know, digest quickly and turn that energy around. And then mentally, you know, it was a tough game. It was a, you know, exhausting game, and kind of rejuvenate. We'll have that rejuvenation practice today to get our legs back, and then mentally just, you know, prepare ourselves for tomorrow, because, you know, this is something that we all work for, you know. And a lot of guys, you know, we're here over the summer working hard, and this is what we've been talking about ever since May. So I think we're all up for the game and ready for it.
You know, we mentioned you guys have a quick turnaround. Take us through what are the kind of things you guys are preparing for in this game tomorrow in training?
Well, it's like today, like I said, though, I think for most of the guys that played significant minutes yesterday, that we'll be more of like a jog and a stretch, kind of, you know, get our legs back where maybe the guys that didn't play as much will maybe get their legs going, you know, maybe small-sided gains or something like that. But other than that, it's more just kind of getting the mentality right and what we need individually to get ourselves ready for tomorrow.
Now, you played Xavier earlier this season, had a 0-0 draw. What do you think you need to do to get a victory against them this time out?
Well, Xavier, I'll tell you this, like, give credit to them. They're a very good defensive team. You know, they're very hard to break down. We're going to have to be on our A game, both attackingly, offensively, and attackingly, because, you know, a team that doesn't give up too many goals, and, you know, the goalkeeper is goalkeeper of the year, it's tough to break them down. So I think defensively, we keep our shape and organization. I think our attack will get, we'll have chances. I have no doubt in my mind that we'll create chances, and it'll make a game difference. It'll be a game changer for us.
Kiesel Broom, starting keeper for the Providence Friars. You can catch him tomorrow night on the Big East Network, and you can also catch it on Fox Sports Go, I believe. That game was on. That's where the game was last night. I know what's where it'll be tomorrow night when you got Providence take on Xavier. And Kiesel, for you, the game was at PPL Park, as we've mentioned, and you're a local guy from that area. You're from the Delaware area. Can you talk about, emotionally for you, how it felt playing in that stadium with, you know, family and friends watching it?
Well, for me, you know, it's kind of like a homecoming. You know, a lot of my family, a lot of my friends are there. And just kind of for me, keeping my emotions in check, because even though it's a big game and I have a lot of family and friends there, you know, I got to, you know, keep focus and, you know, do what I can for the team. But don't get me wrong, it was a great feeling to be able to play in front of my family, especially my mom. She flew out from L.A. for the game, so it was awesome.
Good luck, man. Now I know it's a long way ahead because you got to play the championship tomorrow night, the Big East Championship. But, you know, in terms of the big dance now, NCAAs, I know you don't want to look too far ahead yet, but as a team that's going to make it to the dance, how do you feel you guys match up?
Well, you know, I think for us, we match up with anybody in the country, but, like, not thinking too far ahead. For my mentality, it's on one game at a time, and it's survive in advance. So I think, you know, if we win tomorrow, we book our ticket to the NCAA tournament without a doubt. There's no question in our mind that we're in, you know. And doing that, then we can match ourselves up with who we possibly could play and home field advantage and stuff like that. But right now, you know, I think focusing on the Big East, and we take care of business tomorrow, we'll definitely punch our ticket, and we'll have our dance to shoot out.
Good luck, man. Sounds good. All right, Kiesel Broom, Providence Friars starting keeper, taking some time to join us on the program today. Good luck against Xavier. All right, 617-237-1234, 617-237-1234. That's a way to start off a show, huh? It's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, a little interview to start off the show.
Talk to the local soccer products. B, you won in double overtime last night.
Yep. Yeah. So it's good to see our New England teams doing well. At least some of them. Some of them, I think, had disappointing seasons. But, you know, for colleges, Providence right now, top team in New England. Hopefully they can keep it going.
And it was like, you know, BC had a lot of good products in there. But I think, I wouldn't say Providence flew under the radar. But, you know, in a Big East conference, because, you know, it's not our mom and dad's Big East Conference anymore.
No.
But they've been able to emerge themselves as a top contender in this new age Big East Conference.
You know, and it's not the great basketball conference it necessarily used to be, but it's still a very strong soccer conference. You know, multiple teams, you know, Creighton, Georgetown, Xavier, Providence College, all ranked teams from the Big East. So it's still a very, very strong soccer conference, even if in some other sports it may not be the conference that it once was.
And it's good for Providence, too, because championships in men's basketball last year.
Yeah.
Now finalist in the men's soccer final. So let's see if they can take it home. And then you got BU, who, if they can continue to advance on here, I don't think they have. They're not nationally ranked, but I think if they
just dropped out, so they're right on the borderline. They're probably a tournament team.
Okay.
They're probably a tournament team.
Do you see any? I think Kiesel's obviously one of the highly touted goalkeepers in America. You know, one of the top five, I'd say, and played with the Real Boston Rams, and not somebody that, you know, people are automatically familiar with. I mean, when it comes to college scouting, it's much different than when you have college football, when you have Mel Kiper and Todd McShay breaking down, you know, formulas for 6 hours on ESPN. But when it comes to Kiesel Broom, a kid that he's my color commentator for part of the USL PDL season, and just an incredible athlete. And, you know, I hope he does well, because I think there are teams that are going to need keepers this January in the draft, and He's going to try to make a case for himself.
He could easily be a pick for in the MLS draft. I mean, look at his size. He has great size for a keeper, and you know, I've watched some highlights, and he knows what he's doing in there. I think you know, a lot of MLS teams, you know, could be looking at him come January in the draft.
And it's also interesting looking at their team too. The several Revolution Academy players on it too, and you know, Fabio Machado, a name that sticks out, scored the winner last night. Senior player that, you know, will he be in the picture for the Revolution? You know, it brought back Scott Caldwell after he went into college. Is Machado a guy at the Revolution, you know, look to bring back? And it's had a pretty strong season, and obviously scoring goals in the Big East tournament can only help.
Rams products too. So I mean, it speaks to the investment of USLPDL that these guys having the summer playing time and keeping their legs fresh in those May, June, July, August months playing at a high level, it's good for them. And maybe there needs to be more of an emphasis on it. And it's something that we've talked about a lot on this show, just the importance of the growth of academies and just more soccer. Get these kids more time in general. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that's been talked about is actually making the college soccer season year-round, which I think would be huge for the sport.
Is it possible?
I think it's a long way from that happening. You know, I don't know. The college sports are interesting beasts, but I think that would be something that would be huge for the sport if they could do that. I think we're a long way off from it, but you know, it's good to hear that they've been talking about that over the past few years, and you know, maybe eventually it'll happen.
Yeah, I think it'll eventually happen. Maybe not in the next year or two, but I think maybe down the road, maybe 5-10 years, it'll happen. I mean, look over in London; they're playing all year round. They're not taking little breaks. It's constant soccer. And you know, that's how these great players are formed. You know, it's
not
amazing.
Just even London, it's Brazil, it's
over in
Spain,
Europe. Yeah.
It's everywhere in the world but America and Canada. Do we, you know, put an emphasis on our guys, academy kids up until the senior teams must be playing year-round?
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, we've talked about it before, is that you know, in the U.S., there's obviously such an emphasis on getting an education. And, mm-hmm. and you know, in other countries, there isn't, when it comes to professional soccer, there's players that join these academies, and they're not going to go to college. They're going to, you know, play in that academy year-round. But, you know, here it's a different culture. And, you know, if you can make that year-round, then I think it takes away a little bit of the disadvantage that we have here as far as, you know, producing soccer players, where, if, you know, guys are in academies, they're playing year-round. Mm-hmm. Guys are to college, they're not. So, you know, if you can do that, then you can, you know, still keep the important emphasis on education, you know, because a lot of these players it's not going to work out for, obviously. So I think it is important that they get that. But, you know, if you go year-round, they can still get that year-round training. Maybe still not as good as, obviously, some of these English academies and these academies worldwide, but I think it would make a huge difference.
What about building a – oh, sorry, no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that starts a good debate. I mean, imagine if, you know, our culture was so much different, if we had it just like over in Europe and the academies were all year-round – and you didn't have, you know, didn't care so much about education. Imagine what U.S. soccer would be like in a way, if you think about it. So,
but it goes back to an emphasis on where the importance of soccer is in American culture.
Right,
unfortunately.
Right.
But the other side of that is when you look at the demographics, and I've talked about this with a lot of people numerous times, is it's the second most popular sports for people our age. Everybody in this room is considered a part of a demographic that respects soccer in a much higher light than our parents do. And as you go down the age charts, it increasingly gets higher. So the importance in the level of soccer is only going to grow as we grow. And it's going to take time, and it sucks, but we got to bear with it.
Well, we're on the right track.
And on the right track.
I think seeing over 1,000 Revs fans going down to New York next weekend is a good sign of that.
Absolutely. Can you believe
that? Is it really
1,000?
Over 1,000 now, yep.
Wow, that's
Rebellion
awesome.
And Riders. Listen, I'll give it up. I didn't expect... When I saw Bilal first put out the original tweet that he signed off enough free buses for like 800 people.
Yeah, I saw that too.
I was like, okay, they're going to get to 700.
Yeah, I was going
to say, and we're
going to
be jumping up and down.
Yeah, and meanwhile, like less than 24 hours, already like over 400. Now they're at, you know, 1,000. I thought this would be
great.
A slow process, and they, you know, they'd get a good number, but
quickly.
I did not think 850 would not be enough.
And now you got to only imagine how many Red Bull fans are going to show up for the second leg.
Yeah, that'll be great to see. I mean, I guess
it's going to be much less.
You think so?
They sent over 1,000 to D.C., I believe, for their away game down there. So I wouldn't count them out. We'll see.
I mean, D.C.'s a farther ride than coming up to Gillette, if you think about it.
Fair enough. We'll get Brian O'Connell's opinion next. It's New England Soccer Weekly. Go nowhere. Back after this.
Are you looking for an authentic Italian meal in an intimate setting? Then you'll want to dine at Terra Mia's. This North End Italian restaurant provides a simply divine culinary experience and, as quoted in Zagat's restaurant guide, pastas without compare. And it's reasonably priced. This North End gem will keep you coming back. Terramia is simply the best Italian restaurant in all of Boston. Call 617-523-3112, 617-523-3112, or terramiarestaurante.com.
JP3 Graphics in Weymouth is helping you out with all your custom graphic needs, specializing in custom vinyl stickers, motocross graphics, truck lettering, vehicle wraps, landscaping signs, and more. When you need something designed and printed, call JP3 Graphics and they can do it for you, giving you the professional look you need without the high cost. Call JP3 Graphics today and mention this ad. The setup is free. 781-264-5214. That's 781-264-5214.
I'm Tom Quinlan. 1510 WUFC is your home for all things soccer. Join me every Saturday at noon for New England Soccer Weekly as I'll cover local, national, and international topics pertaining to the beautiful game. Also, tune in to the New England Revolution post-match report immediately following every Revs contest. Be sure to check out my daily podcast as well by following me on Twitter at the Q-Spot Pod. That's at the Q-Spot Pod. It's 1510 WUFC, where liberty has a voice and soccer has a home.
I'm a volunteer at United Way. I'm asking people around the neighborhood what they think this place needs.
Wi-Fi everywhere.
More playgrounds.
Oh, more ice cream trucks.
I was thinking more money in the pockets of local families come tax time.
Can I change my answer?
I was just kidding about the ice cream.
When it comes to getting better tax refunds into the hands of local families, what this place needs is you. To donate or volunteer, go to unitedway.org. Because great things happen when we live united. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Geico RV presents Reflections from the Road.
After a few hours riding in my RV, I get in the zone. It's just me, the road, and the savings I get with Geico RV insurance. There's no more worries, no more 9-to-5 hustle. It's like I'm a caged animal set free. What's that? Is it a grizzly bear? No, it's just me switching to Geico RV insurance. Saving money, wild and free.
Geico, for your RV, trailer, or camper. See how much you could save.
The South Shore's historic Italian restaurant, The Venetian in Weymouth, has been proudly serving families for close to 100 years. Family-owned and operated using Grandma's recipes for that authentic Italian touch, Venetian serves lunch and dinner, specials daily, and breakfast on the weekends. Join them Wednesdays and Thursdays for live music. Planning a party? Let The Venetian do catering for you. The Venetian, 909 Broad Street in Weymouth. Call for takeout, 781-337-4363. 781-337-4363.
I didn't. That was pretty. I didn't realize that they ended up coming back and winning. So good for UConn. Bad for that they lost in the East, Big East semifinals. To
Xavier. Would have been quite the. They're 28-point favorites, so they almost blew that one. But I was excited to see Brian up by at halftime.
Take a little. Like, drink up. There you go. You feeling better now?
A little bit.
It's that time of the season where you get the phlegm a lot easier. It's not a. Fun season for
it's cold.
It's cold season.
It's cold.
It is cold season.
It is cold.
It came through and like, slapped you in the face.
It's that cold that hurts, too. It's like, oh, man. Like, last night I was walking outside, and it was
freezing.
It's like
that cold. You got to, like, smile as you're walking through.
Yeah, it's bad.
All right. Well,
no? I was going to say, not good running weather.
Did I say UConn lost in the Big East semis last night to Xavier? I meant to say Georgetown. I'm sorry about that. 617-237-1234. Brian O'Connell. And New England Soccer Today joins us on the program right now. It's ESPN Boston, by the way, if you've lived under a rock and don't know that sound as you've grown up as a child. Brian, how are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Not bad. Not too bad. How's your day going? How's your weekend been?
Well, I was actually just going to say, I heard you guys saying it's too cold for running. It's actually perfect weather for running. I just came back from a run, so I got to... The counterpoint is that I think it's perfect for running. I'd rather have it be too cold than too hot, so my two cents, I think it's perfect running weather.
You getting ready for your next Men's Fitness cover spread?
Right, you know, fitness doesn't sleep, you know?
No, it does not. Oh, that's funny. All right, speaking of not sleeping, that's most of the soccer reporters in this country who've worked very hard over the past several weeks covering this U.S. men's national team, especially in this area. A lot more heightened coverage, seeing that two now Revolution players are currently representing this Revolution New England squad over in England. I want to get your initial thoughts last night. First on the overall game, and then we'll get into Lee and Jermaine in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, sure. I think it was. I think it was a well played game early on. I think that they were somewhat lucky to get that penalty call. You know, early on that set up Josie's opening strike. But overall, I thought they stemmed the tide pretty well. I think Jermaine. I mean, not to get too much into Jermaine too early, but I think he and John Anthony Brooke did fairly decent considering that they were playing against the third ranked team in the world. So I think overall, I mean, it's the kind of game where you're just trying to get a level as to, you know, where your younger players are. Obviously, there wasn't a ton of veterans on that squad yesterday, but nevertheless, it was kind of a good measuring stick for Jurgen and the coaching staff. So I think overall, you know, they're obviously not pleased with the scoreline, but I think they really found out about guys that they really wanted to learn more about in a kind of about as pressure packed environment as you're going to get for an international friendly.
Yeah, I think there were probably a few questionable calls in that game too. You mm-hmm. mentioned the penalty yeah. for the U.S. It probably should have been a penalty for Colombia, actually on Jermaine Jones' handball,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Which was probably his. One poor moment in that game.
Pretty yeah. good acting impersonation, too.
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, and excuse me.
Well, no, just with looking at... You lose your voice. I'm going to let you get your question out. I'm not going to cut you off. Get it out. Here we go.
No, I was just going to say, you know, that there was the Jermaine Jones handball. There was the goal that Colombia scored that I think should have been offside. I don't think that was... When a guy's standing there blocking right. a defender from getting the ball,
so
I don't think that's
suspect officiating all
yeah,
around.
Suspect officiating going on. But, you know, to me, great opponent. It's very disappointing to see the U.S. Yeah. blow so many leads in these past, you know, 3-4 games for the U.S. It's just been, you know, I don't care who they're playing, whether it's Honduras, Ecuador, Colombia, some great teams, some not-so-great teams. You know, they're not finishing out games. Yes, they're friendlies, but, you know, is this a worrying sign for the U.S.?
Yeah, I think honestly it's something that I don't think it's too worrying so early because it's so early in the cycle. I think there's still plenty of time to kind of make those changes, and I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing Jermaine Jones at center back is because I think, you know, in a sense, I don't think Jurgen's too confident about his central pairing in the defense. So, you know, I think it's a little bit to be expected because I still don't think that Jurgen has a great idea as far as, you know, what his center backs are going to be. For, you know, for this upcoming cycle and, you know, maybe even for the Gold Cup. I mean, the Gold Cup I know is next year, but, you know, who's to say, you know, are we confident in the sense that it's going to be, you know, Beasler and Omar Gonzalez? I mean, you know, right now I'd say those are two default center backs right now, but who's to say that, you know, Jurgen doesn't have other things in mind? Obviously, putting Jermaine Jones back there is kind of a sign that, you know, the center back spot is definitely not, you know, set in stone by any means. So I think it's still early, but it is a concern that I think that will need to be addressed as the cycle continues and progresses. And it's, you know, hopefully it's something that I can kind of iron out before games start meaning something.
Do you think there's a lack of urgency right now from Jurgen Klinsmann to mix around things in the, and when I say that, I only mean like getting different looks from certain players, because we talk about the defense, and I feel like that's going to be the biggest emphasis over the next 4 years until we get to Russia or wherever the World Cup may be in 2018. It is how does Jurgen prepare for that back four? And it feels like that we don't have a definitive answer on it. And in these big games where you'd like to see your starting 11 tested, he's not getting the results he wants, and he's just sticking with his gun. So when do you think it's going to be enough's enough, and you just have to move on from the old guard?
Yeah, honestly, I think the most telling point about that is that DeMarcus Beasley played in yesterday's game. I mean, what is DeMarcus Beasley doing in a game like this where, you know, you'd rather have somebody else out, you know, on defense rather than some guy who's probably not going to play in the upcoming World Cup? Then again, who's to say? Maybe he does. You know, I think somebody said that the age will be at least 38 if he's still on the squad by the time Russia 2018 comes.
Well, are we overshooting it right now? Are we overshooting it already, looking ahead to 2018?
I think, you know, I think you have to. I think you have to kind of look at some of these younger guys. Like, I don't have any objections to you know, plugging in some of the younger guys at this point in time, you know, regardless of, you know, wins or losses. I don't think wins or losses at this point in time really, really matter. I mean, obviously you want to get a win from Colombia and you want to, you know, show well against them. But I think at this point you're still, I mean, you have to keep 2018 in mind. You have to kind of keep, you know, Copa America in mind. I think you have to think of the tournament itself before you start thinking about, okay, are we going to win this game? Because, you know, short-term, yeah, you want to win the game. But long-term, you're really kind of building a squad that is going to go farther than it did, you know, earlier this summer in the World Cup. I think that's really the objective. And I think that, you know, as much as you want them to win and as much as you want them, as nice it would be to have wins against Colombia and Honduras, the fact of the matter is right now is kind of like, you know, a test point. It's really just saying, okay, well, I'm going to try this combination. I'm going to try that combination and see where it goes from there. I'd rather have these things happening now rather than, you know, during World Cup qualifying when the games mean something.
Brian O'Connell joining us from ESPN Boston. You mentioned the need to test players out and you know, having an opportunity in friendlies to do this before it means something. And I think one guy that a lot of New England fans were hoping to see more of was Lee Wynn, who didn't come in until, you know, the 75th minute or something like that. Usually lots of changes made around the 60th minute. I thought we might see him then. Came in, I thought he made an instant impact, looked really good out there. Were you surprised that we didn't see more of him, particularly given the fact that, you know, Revs have a playoff game upcoming? It would have made more sense to give him more minutes in this game than it would in a few days when they're playing a game that's not too far away from the important Revolution playoff game.
Yeah, I was actually getting a little concerned around the 65th minute when we didn't see him. I was like, oh boy, is this going to be the kind of game where he's going to be able to get himself in? So I also had the same kind of fears in that, you know, I was starting to wonder whether or not we would see him. But like you said, Sean, I think it was a really good showing by him, considering that, you know, he's basically thrown into a game that, you know, at the time was 1-1 and that which they were trying to get back the goal, and I think he combined really well with the players around him, which is very encouraging. I mean, obviously all that's been said about, you know, him not getting his first cap in, you know, over 7 years, I think the fact that he kind of stepped on the field and looked like he was, like, you know, that he had never missed a beat was definitely encouraging. And to see him be the primary person on those free kicks was another encouraging sign. So I too thought he did really, really well with the players around him. The nice little back heel in the sequence that sent through Bobby Wood was
that should have led to a goal.
Oh, that was it was Camilo Vargas, like, sniffed that out perfectly. But that should have been a goal. But it's those. You know, moments of those flashes that we've seen him do so often, you know, for the Revs, that, it's almost like he was playing Revs. It was almost like he had that same comfort level with the guys around him. And that in itself, I think, was probably the most encouraging thing about it, was that he just kind of stepped right in and he kind of, you know, acclimated himself, like, pretty much instantly.
Yeah, and you mentioned that chance that he helped create for Bobby Wood, and I thought one of the more interesting things to watch in this game was, you know, the young fours that the U.S. had out there. Rubio Ruben, what is just 18, I believe, who got the start.
Yeah.
I thought he looked pretty good. You know, I thought he looked a lot more actual ready than what we've seen from Bobby Wood, who's 4 years older. You know, do you think this guy has a good future for this national team? And at the same time, are you surprised we've seen so much of Bobby Wood? Because I don't think he's shown that much for the U.S. in the minutes he's had so far.
Yeah, I think Ruben did it. I think he performed well, paired with Josie. I don't know if that's the formation that Jurgen's going to stay with. Obviously they kind of like having, you know, Josie is kind of like the point person. And who'd say, but, I think Rubio did really well. Ruben did really well. And I think that, he definitely showed some moments. He looked really strong early. I think obviously, you know, as the match progressed and as Colombia kind of exerted its will, you know, obviously the forwards kind of disappeared a little bit. But early on, it was really encouraging to see him kind of partner with Josie and with Mixon, and I think he was the one that actually was close by. I think he was the one that Jermaine was going for on that questionable hand call early on. So I think he put himself in good spots, and I think that was an encouraging sign. That was a good encouraging sign for a kid who's really only 18. I think, obviously don't want to put him on the roster for 2018, but at the same time, I think he's put himself in a really good position to at least get some more looks as the cycle progresses.
You know, last night, I thought, you know, watching the game, I thought, you know, Beckerman kind of looked by himself too much in the middle, and Diskerud really wasn't there to help him out. Do you think Klinsmann, you know, maybe will look at that and maybe realize, maybe, hey, Jermaine Jones kind of needs to be by his side to kind of spread the game out a little bit?
No, it's possible. It's really possible. Beckerman, I thought Beckerman was decent. I mean,
I thought Beckerman played well, too.
Yeah, I think it's tough to kind of judge just based on the yesterday's game alone. I mean, there were the opponent, the quality of the opponent was just obviously they're much, much better, especially against a team that had a lot of young players on it, and there was a lot of experimentation going on. Obviously, Jermaine Jones being, you know, one of the biggest ones, and then you have Rubio Ruben up top. But, you know, it's interesting to see. I think Jurgen really, really likes the idea of having Jermaine at center back, because I really think that Jurgen really likes the idea of just having him on the squad, or at least eligible for the squad once 2018 comes around. So I don't know if that's gonna lend itself to having Jermaine fly back into the midfield, going and kind of, you know, helping out guys like Beckerman and Diskerud. I honestly think that, you know, barring some, you know, unless somebody comes into form really quickly, whether that's, you know, Matt Beisler or Jeff Cameron or, you know, or Omar Gonzalez, I think that Jermaine Jones, I think this spot is really like Jermaine Jones is to lose at this point. We may see him, you know, push up top a little bit more and see and kind of help out the defense if the situation calls for it. But I think right now, I think we're looking at Jermaine Jones is probably going to stay at the center back until he basically plays himself out of it.
Brian O'Connell, New England Soccer Today and ESPN Boston, joining us right now. And Brian, when am I going to see more of a sense of urgency from U.S. soccer around these friendlies, just in general? Because I feel like when it comes to, I mean, there's not the same hype for, and I understand it's a friendly, it's a game that doesn't matter, and it's an exhibition. And it's like getting excited for the New York Knicks playing the Los Angeles Lakers inside of UNLV. I get that. But for U.S. soccer, there has to be an emphasis of, we're not the best. We're catching up to everybody else, I feel like. And, you know, it just has to be more when we're playing Colombia. I shouldn't say we. When the United States is playing Colombia and when they're playing these upper echelon teams, you want to win those games because they mean something. Like, go back a couple years ago, what was it, when they beat Germany? I think it was in a friendly. And everybody in the U.S. was... Yeah, and you're enthralled, and you're more entertained, and you're more involved.
Well, I mean, they also mean something if you ever want to get seated for the World Cup.
Exactly. So I mean, like, when are you to see Jurgen put more of an emphasis to winning these friendlies, not just winning them, but as Sean said, closing out games and dominating.
Yeah, it's. I think at this point, I think Jurgen, honestly, I mean, obviously, I would love to go inside his head and kind of do a little bit of psych analysis on what his ideas are, you know, with respect to putting together a squad for these games, but I think, honestly, he really doesn't care. I think at this point, it's the World Cup is so far away, and that, you know, even the Gold Cup is still, you know, a little less than a year away, and I still think he's just thinking long term. And I think that he's one of those coaches that really, at this point, yeah, he wants to test his team against, you know, the likes of Colombia, and Honduras was a pretty decent test as well. But I think at this point, he really doesn't care about, you know, or the Federation doesn't really care about hyping up these games. I think it's more so, okay, I'm thinking about 2018, and right now, this is what I'm going to do. I have a little bit of leeway where, you know, if the team fails, I mean, obviously, if this was a game that was being played, you know, 2 or 3 months, or right up against the 2018 World Cup, I think there'd be a lot more concern, and I think there'd be a lot more heat on Jurgen to say, wait a minute, we need to fix this defense because we just can't close out these games. But I think you can get away with that right now. Is it troubling? Yeah, it's not encouraging, but at the same time, I mean, it's still kind of too early to worry about this so early in the cycle and worry about the fact that it was, you know, that your center back pairing was John Anthony Brooks and Jermaine Jones. I mean, you know, it is what it is. It's a sense that, you know, right now you're thinking long term. You're not thinking short term. You're not thinking, wow, it would be nice to have, you know, the scalp of Colombia, you know, early on and to say, hey, we've just beat the third ranked squad in the world. But I really don't think that it's too much of a concern. I think the bottom line is how well you do at the World Cup, and I think that's something that's really on your mind. I think, you know, he took stock of what happened at, you know, what happened in Brazil. He said, okay, how can we improve this club? This is what he's doing. This is what he's trying to do to improve this club. And there's going to be growing pains. So I think that you kind of just have to kind of scale it back a little bit and say, all right, this is what he's trying to do. He's trying to figure out more about this team as this early into the cycle. He's going to learn more. If the situation continues where they can't close out these games and Jermaine Jones looks, you know, horrible, or John Anthony Brooks just can't forget how to play center back, then maybe start worrying. But I think at this point, it's still too early to say, they shouldn't be going, that they're not winning these games versus Colombia and Honduras. It's just something that, you know, it's just, they're growing pains. There are things that he's going to have to learn, and we're going to have to learn as observers, as the cycle progresses and as we learn more about the pieces that, you know, which pieces fit, which pieces don't, and, you know, what things work and what things don't work.
Yeah, you mentioned long term, and I think there's like you mentioned earlier, there's been a lot of questions about, like, why is DeMarcus Beasley coming on late in this game? You know, again, he's a guy that's going to be 36 of the next World Cup, probably too old to be, you know, playing left back. But at the same time, Jermaine Jones, you're making, have this experiment, him playing center back, he's going to be even older than DeMarcus Beasley at the next World Cup. And, you know, he's a guy that played very well for the U.S. as a defensive midfield. If you're really looking long-term, though, how realistic is it to think that, you know, over 36 and a half-year-old Jermaine Jones is going to be a key contributor, even at center back, in the next World Cup? And, you know, if it is long-term, do you think it makes sense to be, you know, forcing this experiment, playing a guy who's, you know, 32 or 33 years old now, out of position, trying to teach him a new spot, you know, just hope that it will extend his career 4 years down the road where, you know, realistically, I don't think the chances are that good that he'll be a player that can be a key contributor in the next World Cup.
Yeah, no point to even bring on the plane.
You know, my guess, and this is just my own, you know, my own two-cent analysis, I think Jurgen really loves Jermaine Jones. I really think that if there's one player on the squad that Jurgen would say, I trust my life with, it would be Jermaine Jones. They just have a very, very good history. And I think that Jurgen, in a sense, I don't know if it's something, again, I don't mean to psychoanalyze the guy, but I really think that it's Jurgen saying, how can I find a way to keep this guy that I trust so much on the field come 2018? I know, I'll put him at center back. And I really think that's really like what the idea is at putting Jermaine at center back. I really think that Jurgen isn't as confident in his team unless Jermaine Jones is on the field. I really think that he feels that in order to get the most out of the squad that he puts on the field, his best chance at getting a result, his best chance at getting a win, is having Jermaine Jones on the field. I think he's thought about, you know, he's 36 and a half. You're right, he's going to be too old. He's going to be very old, you know, for a midfielder. So he says, let me see if I can put him in, you know, keep him on the field, but maybe drop him back a little bit, maybe put him at center back. I think really that's the idea. DeMarcus Beasley, I have no idea. I don't know. To be fair, DeMarcus Beasley is a good player. I mean, I think he held his own at the World Cup.
He did.
So I think there are some traces of, you know, maybe not letting go of certain guys. I think that Jurgen tries to find any way possible to keep Jermaine Jones on the field for 2018, no doubt. And I think, to maybe a lesser extent, he does maybe the same thing for DeMarcus Beasley. But I think that he's really wedded to the idea of having Jermaine Jones on the field once 2018 comes around, and I think that the move to center back is kind of allows that, or makes it a little bit more easier to digest.
This is a psychoanalytical question that only requires a yes or no answer, but do you think that trust in Jermaine Jones comes from the fact that much of his playing comes from the Bundesliga?
Absolutely.
Okay. Brian O'Connell, ESPN Boston, and New England Soccer Today. Follow him on Twitter, at Brian O'Connell. Brian, before we let you go, we were just talking with Kiesel Broom, the Providence starting keeper before. College soccer doing pretty well up in this area. I know you're down in the Providence area. You must be excited, just as a fan of the game, to see the local colleges do so well.
Yeah. And I mean, especially when you look at a guy like a team like PC. I mean, I think they have offhand, I haven't followed them as closely as I've followed them in recent years, but I think they have a pretty good mixture of guys that are Revolution Academy products. So it's always encouraging that whenever you see those guys, you know, starting at the college level, like Dominic Machado, Fabio Machado. I think Manny Andrade is also there too, if I remember correctly. Whenever you see guys like that, whenever you see Revolution Academy products do well, their teams do well in the NCAAs, and this late in the season for them, it's always an encouraging sign. So, and of course, it's all the better when those colleges are local. So, New England soccer, New England college soccer, same thing. It's all good whenever you see teams from the area do well.
It's nice when we can talk about soccer this late in November, huh?
No doubt. I love it.
All right. Let's make it a habit going on here on out. Brian O'Connell, ESPN Boston and New England Soccer Today. We'll talk soon, all right?
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. 617-237-1234. 617-237-1234. Good stuff. I'm satisfied.
It's an exciting time for New England soccer, no question about it.
Absolutely.
You know, last year at this time, it would have been probably struggling for things to talk about with with an international weekend, no Premier League. But you know, right now you got fantastic stuff going on in New England. You got probably three teams from New England going to make it into the college tournament. You got, you know, the Revolution still playing soccer, which, you know, hasn't happened in 7 years this late. Right. So it's great to see.
You're a numbers guy. I'll give you these numbers before we go to break here. Something for you to chew on, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about it more if you find it interesting. The attendance numbers were released. I think this is the average for 2014. If my computer would work here, you'd make everything a lot better. All right, here we go. 34 out of the 34 major leagues, there was a study on attendance. Obviously, Germany's number one. They have the most passionate fans in the world. They average 42,000 fans a game.
Stadium size also plays into that, too. Stadium. Because there's a lot of smaller stadiums in the Premier League.
But you'll never believe where MLS finishes. Eighth.
Wow.
Eighth.
That's pretty good.
Eighth MLS.
And 19,000.
And moving up. Yeah, they average 19,149 a year. I mean, the total attendance, 6,185,127. I guess this is for 2014. And then 2013, excuse me. And then I guess 2014. I just pulled up the graphic of it, but it's over a 300 and plus game span. Premier League's number two. La Liga's That's right. number three. Serie A's number four. La Liga's number five. And then League One's number six. The Dutch League is number seven. And then ninth is the Super League in China. And then the Primera division in Argentina is 10th. But average attendance, Germany blows out everybody else in the water in average attendance. I mean, England and Germany are level on attendance in terms of total numbers. And then there's a major drop-off after La Liga. But in terms of average attendance, I mean, the Bundesliga is far above all else. Everybody is great.
Well, and MLS only about 4,000 behind Serie A,
yeah,
which is pretty good to see.
Very good to see.
I'm sure Seattle helps that out a lot.
Oh, yeah. Seattle makes a huge impact.
Oh, yeah.
Seattle's like twice the average attendance of like the second highest MLS team. But.
Imagine if Seattle Angelic could average and attend. If New England could replicate what Seattle does, that would, to you guys, what you're saying, these numbers would be much higher, maybe even in top five.
Who knows? Oh, yeah. Maybe the second leg will provide some Seattle-like atmosphere.
Maybe we'll talk about
something.
That next.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we should. Maybe you should come back. 617-237-1234. It's New England Soccer Weekly.
Okay, let's say your business does $5,000, $20,000, $100,000 or more in monthly revenue. There are probably times when you need more cash flow to run your business, right? Right. If you're a business owner in this situation, you need to call the Merchant Cash Advance line right now. We're not a bank and we don't have bank rules. We're a direct lender with the power to approve deals. We look at your business and we decide how much money to lend you, good credit or bad credit. If your business is solid, we can lend you up to $500,000. You can use the money for anything you think is right to run your business. If you need money and you don't want to deal with a bank, call now. Learn how easy it is to get up to $500,000 in as little as 2 to 3 days.
Call now, 800-452-4846, 800-452-4846, 800-452-4846. That's 800-452-4846.
His hair was falling out in clumps.
Our golden retriever, Sundance, he scratched incessantly.
Mounds and mounds of fur all over the place.
Our hairballs have hairballs.
Olive was suffering like a dog. She was itching, she was scratching, she was licking 24 hours a day.
Just chewing and chewing and chewing. So.
Scratching and biting.
Buddy, my Shih Tzu's itching problem, constantly licking his feet. It keeps me up at night.
And all it took was one container of Dynavite.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The Omega 3 fatty acids,
flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa,
the digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
The shedding slowed down to almost none. The scratching went away after a few days.
Tons of energy, no more bad smells.
The shedding has stopped and the itching has stopped.
Sleep at night. Get your dog some Dynavite.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Honey, you built a beautiful fire.
Ah, piece of cake. Just rub two sticks together. You're
the man, rubbing sticks.
Yeah, rubbing sticks. I'm lying.
What?
I didn't use two sticks.
I know. You used your cool new Zippo utility lighter.
Well, how come you let me go on about it?
Because I wanted you to feel like the man.
Yep, I'm the man.
You're the man.
Yep.
Oh, and you have a spider on your shirt.
Don't get it off me. Get it off.
Spiders are scary, but Zippo's rugged new outdoor line has everything you need to start a fire.
It's just a fuzzy.
Don't get that off, too. No, it's a spider.
Fuzzy.
Hi, Tom Baudet. Why is everything the new something? Apparently 60 is the new 40, Thursday's the new Tuesday, and frugal is the new cool. Well, if you find all that to be the new confusing, just remember Motel 6. With the lowest price of any national chain, we were frugal before frugal was cool. And being cool is the new... Oh, never mind. I'm Tom Baudet for Motel 6, and we'll leave the light on for you. Book online at motel6.com.
This week on Geico's Stuff Found in Your Car, we look inside your rear door pocket.
Oh, hey. Yeah, me, the almond. Possibly one of the healthiest snacks, just rolling around in the crumbs of inferior foods. You were too busy to save me, but are you too busy to switch your car insurance to Geico where you could save hundreds of dollars in just 15 minutes? Probably not. Saving money with Geico is awesome. Almonds, on the other hand, are just a superfood. No big deal.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com today.
Want something different for dinner tonight? Then check out Papagayo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar. With four locations across the metro Boston area, Papagayo's is the perfect restaurant for a party of two or 20. So come and have a burrito or a signature taco, and don't miss the New England Revolution post-match report on 1510 WUFC. View the menu now at papagayoboston.com. That's P-A-P-A-G-A-Y-O Boston.com.
All right, 1510 WUFC. Welcome back to New England Soccer Weekly. I'm Tom Quinlan, Sean Donahue, and Kev Coleman with us today. Kev Coleman on Saturday afternoons. Yeah. Not too bad.
Not too bad.
Not too shabby.
It's got a nice sound to it.
Does he look like Justin Timberlake's twin?
He does this every time. Every time. Every time.
Somehow finds a way to work it in there. Hi, Chris Landry. I've been really acknowledging you today. How you been?
Good. How about you?
Not too bad. Did you know that we're changing over our
hotline there, sponsored? Big
yeah.
Deal.
We also got Papagayo's, our friends over at Somerville and Assembly Row in Quincy. We have Marina Bay Realty Group. We got some new friends on the show. And then we're also
align themselves with such a powerful man like yourself.
Stop it. Now you're going to make people laugh. You already did. We're actually changing the call letters to the station, too. I don't know if people heard about that. We're now WMEX starting Monday.
Wow. Okay.
No, we do not support the Mexican national team here.
That's
on
my next
show.
Question. That was going to be my next question.
We got the Wi-Fi working in here today. I'm happy the connectivity's working. All right, we got about 10 minutes left in the show. Not even, so we got to hurry up. So I want to get quickly, Sean, your thoughts on what was a very good Eastern and Western Conference semifinal and a great conference final lined up here.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't believe some of the results we saw in the second legs. First of all, you know, I was predicting Salt Lake to get the upset over the Galaxy. That first leg set it up perfectly for a great game in L.A. 5-0 win from the Galaxy. Who saw that coming? I mean, I never would have predicted that. I thought that was going to be the most exciting of any of the second legs. Absolute blowout. You know, I was shocked by that result. On the flip side, if you had asked me going into the second legs what I thought was the biggest lock result, it was that Seattle going to blow away Dallas. Did not happen. Dallas played very well against Seattle. You know, one error from Seattle and Dallas could have been going through. I can't believe that game ended up 0-0. You know, surprise result there. And now you have going into the Western Conference Final, Galaxy clearly the team with the most momentum. Seattle just sneaked through. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But Galaxy playing very well right now. I don't think any team is going to want to face them. That's going to be a very exciting Western Conference Final. Probably the Western Conference Final everyone wanted to see. The two best teams in MLS going at it. And then in the East, you saw New England coming into the second leg with a two-goal advantage. Just building on that advantage against Columbus. A Columbus team that, again, had been playing very well down the stretch. But New England just blew them out. I think there were some worrying signs early in that game defensively where Columbus had some chances. But, you know, once New England got that fifth goal on aggregate, I think the series was as good as done. And then obviously the two red cards, you know, made it even more done for the Revolution there. And then D.C. New York. New York was pretty much in control there until the Roy Miller red card, which kind of shook things up, but they still managed to hold on. But now Roy Miller, you know, one of their key outside backs, out for both games against the Revolution, which is fantastic news for New England, something that they have to take advantage of. Mm-hmm. And that's just it's just great to have that that opportunity for the Revs to attack down the wings without Roy Miller, World Cup player, that will be missing for New York.
Will they be able to take advantage of it, you think?
You know, I think that's a position that's an area they can definitely take advantage of. I think New York's back line has some issues. Wasn't exposed that much by DC until the red card, but I think that's something that the Revs can absolutely take advantage of. A guy like Teal Bunbury attacking down the flank without Roy Miller, I think that could be huge for this team.
I remember hearing you talk about counterattacks recently and the Revs doing such a great job against yep. Columbus and exposing them on the run. Last Saturday night, it was against the Crew. So coming into this match against New York now, do you think that they're going to be able to work up the field just as quickly and just as efficiently?
You know, it's one of those things where if you give up an early goal to New York, it changes the game completely in that, you know, New York is going to want to come away with this game from a victory. So there will be opportunities for the Revolution to press forward. They're going to leave some holes. You know, I don't think there's any way that New York wants to go to New England without an advantage. So the opportunity is going to be there to counterattack, but if the Revolution give up an early goal, you know, it completely changes the game. And I think that's something that, you know, they have to be very careful of. We've seen it times this season where they have struggled giving up early goals. Lately on this great run, they haven't. You know, they've had times where they've come back, but, you know, overall, I don't think this is, despite what we've seen down the stretch where the Revolution have been good at coming back from games, you know, if you go behind in the playoffs against an experienced New York team, it's going to be difficult to come back from. So it's really important that they keep their shape in the back, and I think there have been some worrying signs. I think we saw that in the second leg against Columbus early on. Fortunate Columbus didn't break through. Bobby Shuttleworth came up huge. So if they can avoid going down early against New York, they're going to have opportunities on the counterattack, no question, in this first leg. And if they take advantage of that and come back to New England with, you know, with a lead or even with a draw with some goals in it, you know, they'll be in a very good position.
I mean, Sean and I talked about this during the break. You know, Shuttleworth is just playing out of his mind. And he needs to continue doing that against the Red Bulls.
Distribution has to get better, I would say.
Right. It still does. It still does.
And it's something that it's just been a struggle all year.
Worse than the league.
we hear Sean say it at every Revs game. Still the worst in the league.
But the numbers don't lie. You have to be able, in order to beat New York, you have to be able to not, you know, fall into those traps. And, you know, you can't expose yourself in any shape or form against a world-class team.
You turn the ball over against New York. Guys like Tim, I mean, they haven't necessarily shown it in their finishing against D.C. I think they could have scored a lot more goals against D.C. than they did.
Absolutely.
With Bradley Wright, Phillips, Cahill,
so good.
Henry, all missing good chances, but you know, I don't think that's going to keep up. You turn the ball over against this team, they have, you know, three world-class finishers that can take advantage.
Right, and we talked about how the Revs' back line just has to, you know, really contain them and play well. It's a little scary to think about, a little nervous before the game to think that, you know, you got Bradley Wright, Phillips, Tim yep. Cahill, and Henri coming at you, trying to create some scoring chances. So they're going to have to play well. Soares, Jose, and, you know, Chris Tierney, and, you know, hopefully Andrew Farrell can come back and play healthy.
Yeah, I mean, you hope, first off, you hope Andrew Farrell is going to come back healthy in general. It's going to be a good week of training for him, and then we'll see what happens with this team injury-wise and just health-wise, fitness-wise, moving in to the Eastern Conference Finals against New York. First leg this Sunday afternoon, 1:30, Harrison, New Jersey, Red Bull Arena.
Next Sunday.
Showtime. Next Sunday. You're right. Not tomorrow. Next Sunday.
Huge traveling support. Can't
wait. Huge traveling support. Brian Bolello could sell out Red Bull Arena if he wanted to, probably. Mr. Movember, killing it with the stash, but even killing it with the buses as well. Could you give him Executive of the Year right now? Would you give it to him?
I mean, if the way this season has turned around for the Revolution, it's certainly not out of the question.
It's not. It's unfortunate the voting's ended for the Riders, but he definitely has put this organization in a good position for the future, and we'll see what happens in the future next week when they take on the Red Bulls. Thank you very much, Sean Donahue, as always, brother.
Glad to be here again.
Chris, Kev, thanks, man. Kiesel, thanks. Brian, thanks, bro. I will be talking with you people more on my podcast. Follow me on Twitter, @PodcastInvaders. I'm Tom Quinlan. We'll return next week. Bye-bye.
Veterans Livery in Weymouth services the entire South Shore with all your corporate transportation needs. Coverage spanning to all New England area airports makes Veterans Livery the number one choice for transportation. Veterans Livery offers 24-hour service, which